Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and our paradigm shifter tonight is a real paradigm shifter, and he was our first guest on this show. I believe it was 2007. This is a guy who knows a lot about sacred geometrics, about Egypt and the mystery schools, and sound, and more sound. So welcome to the show, Randy Masters.
Thank you, Veronica.
I hear you've got a doctorate now, so it's Dr. Randy Masters.
Can be it, yeah.
But Randy, I've got a sore knee.
Yeah, well, it's a different type of doctor. It's a doctor of divinity. That's about wholeness, so there's, you know.
Well, knees are about fear, so I guess we could get into that. But let's talk to you about sounding out my knee. No, let's talk about some of the adventures you've had recently. You went to Egypt right after all the great fracas over there.
But I don't want to skip your knee, because actually there is a good story that goes with that.
Oh, great. Okay. Let's see the story.
And that is, the real healing back in the Christ time was about making one whole. You know, Christ, Yeshua didn't promise to heal somebody of their ailments. He promised to make them whole. And once they came into that wholeness, if something was appropriate to be healed, you know, leprosy or whatever they had, that could be healed. But the experience of wholeness was really the bottom line.
And wholeness can be dying if it integrates
That's right.
your soul journey.
Mm. Yeah, and he would ask people, do you want to be healed? Is it okay to be healed, and are you willing to be healed? But the real promise was about wholeness, and I think that is really the point.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, now, a lot of the healing that we talk about these days resonates with that, but also a lot of it comes from the Egyptian times, doesn't it?
Yeah, they had, essential oil healing, which is one of the oldest forms of healing.
Mm-hmm.
They had sound healing. They had surgeries and knowledge of the body that is astounding. The Luxor Temple is completely encoded with knowledge of the entire human body.
Hmm.
I think some of that knowledge even surpasses some of the knowledge that's been uncovered today in traditional circles.
Hmm.
You can go to different parts of the temple and connect with the Akashic records of the knowledge of that part of the human body and tune in and receive a healing.
Wow.
I would also invite listeners, if they do meditations, that they could also go to that temple and ask for the Akashic record knowledge to radiate to their energy field and absorb, and could still get a healing remotely from wherever they are in the world if it's appropriate.
Now, have you done that, Randy?
Yeah, I do a lot of traveling in Merkabas and things to these different sites to connect with energies that I can use in my life wherever else I am without physically having to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that in workshops. We go on journeys to various places, but we always ask and get permission.
Well, let me ask you this question, which might talk about asking, hey?
Yeah.
Which might be kind of a naive question, but is it so that if you go out of your body, if you're traveling in the etheric, you can actually go beyond space and time and integrate with an aspect of yourself that hasn't gotten the illness yet, right?
Yes.
So
you
is that
forward and backwards in time, and sort of, you might say, up or in dimensions to a place where the timeline here, something has not occurred. And then you can, like I was recently working with that with myself, to go back to just before I was born, so I could connect with energies that were in a more whole, complete state that was disturbed by my own birth process. So I went back to connect with the nerves and things because my right arm was paralyzed in the birth process. So I went back to before the birth process, where that paralysis had not happened, to connect with those energies prior to the injury.
So was there a result that was palpable or that you could feel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So far, yeah.
Good.
My right arm feel like it lengthened, and some of the nerve pathway, it feels like there's more light traveling through it now.
Hmm.
So that's a process that I can keep going back to and exercising until I get those energy highways opened up more.
Wow.
So
well,
that's
now,
an example. You know, I mean, I didn't have to go very far.
Right, right. Well, you had to lie down maybe, huh?
Yeah, I didn't need an update in my passport or anything.
What kind of health coverage did they have in Egypt? No, I'm kidding you.
Yeah, I know. There is one. Trust and belief in the divine.
Wow. So that's
the greatest coverage because it covers you dimensionally as well.
And tell me this, is initiation simply the process of transcending influences of space and time?
Well, that is a very nice component of it. Initiation can have a lot of different aspects to it. One, it can be a remembrance that all you need is an environment or a circumstance or a connection that has you remember something that's in your own field, and you reconnect with that. So it can also be an opening to something that one in this life experience has not opened to. It can also be connecting with other aspects of yourself that already have mastery in some different areas and making that bridge, that sort of like an electromagnetic bridge, a consciousness bridge, into this time and space flow that, that one is in. And so initiation can be something that one has done before but did not bring into this life experience, or something that did not get accomplished before, and you reconnect with that energy and perhaps this time finally move through something.
Hmm. We often think that initiation is a life and death experience.
New life on the other side of the initiation, because you're born new to yourself, and the death of the beliefs, old belief systems, and the death of the old matrix and resistances and thought viruses and things that one may have wedged in their field in some way that could be cleared out. And so,
I like that you're saying thought viruses. I'm going, is that
I use that term quite a bit.
Is that just contagious thought from the collective?
Yeah, well, yeah, or anything that's placed by whoever is desiring to place a certain thought into the field, and then that starts spreading. And if enough people do it, pretty soon they believe it's real.
Hmm.
I mean, I think that was one of the fears that beings had of John Lennon's song Imagine, that particular song would somehow introduce new dreams into people's consciousness. So that song was banned from lots of the radio stations in this country.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize that. So before we go much farther, I'm already excited about what we're talking about, and I will not run out of questions except for this one, which is, Randy, who are you, and how did you get onto this path? I know you're a musician. I know you're a Santa Cruz kind of guy, right?
Yeah, I came to Santa Cruz in 64, and I feel very at home here, and I have not left.
Oh, where did you come from?
The surf era, and when the Beach Boys actually performed here, and the Ventures, and all those groups, you know, and the surf music. Okay. I actually played surf music, too.
Wow.
People don't know I even played electric guitar.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rock and roll, even. In my early days when I was first doing jazz, I also played blues and rock and roll.
So you were a real beach baby as well?
Yeah, I did some of that. More of the music than anything. I did way more music than going to the beach.
Hmm. Where were you from before Santa Cruz?
Well, I was born in Las Vegas.
Oh, I
Nevada.
Always thought you were from Santa Cruz. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I've been really adapted here, so I've created a new blueprint, you might say, of myself compared to where I hatched.
where you hatched.
In, you know, in looking at who I am and all of that is still a discovery. You know, I meet people who see aspects of myself that I haven't even fully met, and they can see these things and, you know, sometimes kind of demand that I be the being that they're seeing, even if I haven't fully met that aspect.
Well, when did you start the healing process? Is it because you had a difficult right arm, or is it...
That got me going to seeking healers and things, and that's...
When you were little, or when you were young?
Late in the 70s, I didn't do much of that before. I led a fairly normal life and played sports and did all those kinds of things, and then... As I started opening up into spirituality, and at that time I was teaching in the university, teaching music too, and all the metaphysics. And the metaphysics and spirituality opened me up, and then I began to meet different kinds of healers and go to them and then study with them and see them a lot. And so they downloaded a lot of things into my field that was important for me to know.
Hmm. So they activated you.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I mean, I studied with polarity therapy, and I studied Regenesis with Bob Rasmussen, who taught me a lot about how to do healing with the blue light, which I teach in workshops and teach to people. And that light we also activated in Egypt, and I have some stories about that as well.
Wonderful.
The regenerating blue light that all of life is connected with.
Hmm.
And so, and I studied with a Korean grandmaster who had actually mastered most of all the martial arts, and then he uses it for healing. Hmm. So in working with him for years, he downloaded into my field, into my body, knowledge of healing. And then a couple Indian healers, one named Custer Bolton, that I studied with for many, many years. And the way of studying was talking to him, hanging out with him, and being worked on, you know, on the table by him. And then in that process, he was literally activating. And that's a type of initiation.
Mm-hmm.
Through receiving the healing, it was introducing. So that's another term for initiation.
So people can actually pass to one. It's like Shaktipat, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You can actually pass to another transmissions of wisdom.
From aura to aura. Uh-huh. And with the intent, and so by receiving the healing, that was producing a change in my consciousness. And a healer can download to you their whole life's knowledge and wisdom, which I feel Bob Rasmussen did, knowing him for like 25 years. Mm. I started working with him in the 70s, and he died the day after 9/11.
Wow.
So I had years of working with him and him telling me stories about the Sirius star system and things like that, which I feel that's where he was from.
Now, in the Sirius star system, isn't there, don't many believe that there's a rapport between the Sirius star system and the way the pyramids are aligned in Egypt?
Yeah, that's one of the key star systems where ancient wisdom and in the pyramid matrix and building the pyramids, as well as the Pleiades and Orion, a number of different ones, but Sirius for sure, and certainly Isis and Osiris are emanating from that, from areas in the Sirius star system. And so that Sirius star system also had a huge effect on the information that was downloaded for Lemuria. Lemuria's directive, in other words, flowed from the goddess energy in Sirius, aligned with different planets and other stars, and then stepped its way down here into Earth. It's a 90,000-year cycle.
Hmm.
April 23rd, 1994 was the last time that cycle came around.
Hmm.
That's a very big cycle that once it opens, everything in our universe gets a realignment. And then it takes sometimes some time for beings here to open up to what they got. But every rock, every cell in our entire universe got a new directive on April 23rd, 1994.
So the directive would be what? A download of the universe?
For the next 90,000-year cycle. Knowledge that's never been here before, information, vortexes could be opened that have never been opened up before.
Hmm.
Everything we would need for a total new paradigm, everything we would need for it, was encoded then.
Hmm.
And then it's now unfolding. Things are unfolding. But the
sort of like when people have a near-death experience, it takes a long time for them to embody what the experience showed them, right?
You know, I would call this a near-life experience.
Wow.
You know, where new life potentials would be downloaded that were not here before.
Okay.
Including, solutions for disease and things like that, inventions.
Well,
that the day before were not here, and then that day the knowledge is literally available for someone to tune into.
Hmm. So if we wanted to tune into it, can we, or is it just
those? Yes, absolutely. Totally available.
What's required? Just the resonance?
Yeah, basically becoming your own radio station and tuning your radio station resonantly to that through proper asking in the heart from a deep and sincere place.
Hmm.
I mean, there's people who are not deep and sincere, and they can get the downloads as well.
Hmm.
But certainly, when there's reverence there and from a deep, respectful place with gratitude and love and connecting more with the sacred heart that somebody has, which is beyond the heart chakra.
Hmm.
That's the part that you enter. There's several ways to enter it, but one way is through the back between the left shoulder blade and the spine. And when you get into a place of supreme reverence and gratitude and love, and you enter there, because, see, this is like going into the command center in your whole being. Hmm. This is going into the black hole, you might say, where your own consciousness and the creator, you meet the creator there. And so you don't want to take pollution in there, which includes any kind of baggage, mental nonsense and limiting beliefs and other stuff. So, but when you get in a high enough space of love and gratitude, you sort of create the grace, a grace factor that allows you to go in there and not pollute, because you wouldn't want, you know, some aspect to get in there that could create a disturbance pattern in your being. Does that make sense?
Yeah, or carry one along, you mean?
Yeah.
Too.
So that's available to all of us.
Wow. Well, I want to
stay. The highest place in our being for connecting with the God source directly.
And that's right in behind your heart?
Yeah, it's behind the heart, between the left shoulder blade and the spine.
Okay.
And, you know, you get really quiet and, you know, you tune into that reverent place, and you can even imagine projecting in there. We do that in some of my workshops where we get in a Merkaba or something, or different. There's different processes, and then go into that place and then talk to the creator and get information about ourselves, about things. You know, we wouldn't get anything that we don't qualify to get. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's no getting information outside of respect. Everything has a supreme level of respect there.
Hmm. Well, I don't want to leave this part of the subject, but I'm going to right now and go back into Egypt, if you don't mind. And
No problem.
The Sirius connection with the pyramids and so on, do you believe it was the Syrians or a conglomerate?
Many different ones, but the Syrians had very, very, very high levels of math and sacred geometry and knowledge that are far older than other places like the Pleiades. So
did they create the pyramids? Is that it? Did they create the magic?
That's part of it. You know, it's a team of different galactic beings, because the pyramids are designed to anchor starlight and energies from lots of different star systems. It's referred to as the star mirror.
Mm.
The star mirror is where the ancients would build temples on the ground here, well, on Earth, that mirror the placement of the stars. So the idea is that everything you'd want to know about our DNA is also in the stars, and the placement and the angles and the distances between different stars, you can see geometric patterns.
Hmm.
So when they laid out the Giza pyramids, there's a place in the desert in Egypt, you know, about a half a mile, I'm estimating right now, from the pyramid, called the Southern Cross. And it's a well. And it's very inconspicuous. There's nothing special that you would see. And life force comes out of the earth hugely at that place. Then there's this logarithmic spiral that looks like a nautilus shell that spins out from that well and gets larger and larger and larger and larger. Well, on one of these larger arms, the three main pyramids of Giza are placed right on that spiral.
Hmm.
And then they link up with the Sphinx. Then when you look up at the stars, the angles of those three pyramids and the spacing mirror the three stars in the belt of Orion.
Hmm.
So there's also a very big alignment with Orion, because Orion is a major, major stargate for leaving this universe and going into other universes.
Hmm.
And there's been lots of star wars there amongst different star systems fighting over that stargate, trying to, you know, deal with who comes and goes here.
Hmm.
And so that's another component.
So is it that the way the pyramids have aligned with the stars, the way it's all set up, is it a little bit like what you were talking about with the 90,000-year cycle, where they download consciousness or new wisdoms and so on?
Yeah, it's like a cosmic circuit board, like, you know, you would like in a giant universal computer.
So when you go there, and you, I know we can go etherically or in our travels, but you go there physically and you take tours.
Yeah, I help co-lead tours there. I've done three.
Okay, so when you're there, I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you glean or do you absorb that wisdom that's present in these physical alignments?
And that operates on different levels based on a need to know, based on your soul's signature and blueprint. That's also in your voice. It's encoded in your voice. It's in your field. And it's in the Akashic records that are there, that are anchored at those sites. It's in your history as a being, including other lifetimes.
But is that that you're ready for the wisdom, or is that that you
Well, it
resonate?
can get downloaded even when you're not ready, but you might not access it. You might not have any awareness of what you got.
Right.
You can get somebody that looks like a very unaware, naive tourist, including a very obnoxious, loudmouth tourist. You follow me? I'm just trying to paint this cartoon picture, right?
With shorts
This seems
and
like
a
so clueless.
shorts
How
and a
could
Hawaiian
anyone?
shirt.
Yeah, exactly that whole deal, right? You know, a Chevy Chase at the pyramids type of, I don't know, you know. So the idea then is that that being could be majorly downloaded, and everybody else on the tour is thinking they're obnoxious or something, you see.
I
But
see, you
that
just
person could
can't.
get more downloads than all the people who are with highfalutin degrees and knowledge and thinking that they are this and that and
Well,
thinking
here's a
they're a
stupid question
reincarnation of
for you.
here's
Why?
something, you know?
Why?
And then in their right timing, all of a sudden, they'll blow your mind. They'll do things you wonder how the I mean, I've seen these things happen, you know. And so there's a humility that do you really know who that is that's standing next to you?
No.
Really? You know, and it keeps everybody mellowed out and a little bit humble for what can happen. So
So tell me this, does it awaken? Can it, can, did you feel more awakened from those three trips?
yeah, and I'm still getting it. I mean, this last time, I was perfectly healthy the whole trip. The last day, I start getting clogged up, and then 2 days of flying, and then I had 2 months of sinus and stuff in my chest. You know, it processed me. Not while I was there on duty, you might say. I was like totally healthy and in my element. And then I had 2 months of something. It was the hardest thing to clear out of my body, you know, longest lasting of just about anything I've ever had.
Wow.
You never know. I mean, sometimes people get various kinds of travel sicknesses and illnesses and things because it's purifying your body, and you get up leveled. And then for your body to now sustain the new resonance of the energies that you contacted, it has to purify toxins out of your body.
Just to really detox, yeah.
Yeah, so I say I probably had like a 2 month detox,
Wow.
and I'm better for it now. But that part wasn't fun. But it didn't interfere with me. So I had sort of an agreement, you know, as a co-leader on this trip, that I did not want anything preventing me from being on all the time I needed to be on.
Wow.
Yeah.
So whilst you were there, I mean, it's quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whilst you were there, would you like to tell us some of the things you do? Like, I know you're a sound wizard and these various things. Can you tell us how you pottered through some of these amazing talents of yours and
Well,
activated them?
I bring tuning forks with me that I have made based on the mathematical work that I've done and that knowledge about aspects of Egypt and the different monuments and pyramids and what numerical codes go with that. So I bring some of those special tools with me. Then I also use my voice and sing really low notes, like Buddhist chanting, in extreme low registers. Sometimes an octave lower than where I normally can even do it. If I'm in the right vibe,
And
I
why do
can.
you do that?
Because those low notes can activate things at these sacred sites. They're
They can
sacred by
activate the earth, like the pyramids or the people
the
or both.
stones and the site and the Akashic records, and can
Wonderful.
actually get the rooms and even outdoor temples without a roof can be activated with sound and get those places vibrating.
Wow.
And I do this all around. And so,
And your tour people do as well?
yeah, and there's other people who maybe have done it before, maybe have not done it before, and so we give them instruction. And there's other people who join in, and other times when I just do something, and that starts a wave of some kind. Like 2 trips ago, when we were in the Great Pyramid in the King's Chamber, and I was laying in the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber, singing the note that makes the whole room go off. And before the rest of the tour came up to join us, they were down in the Queen's Chamber, and they would hear the sound, and they had no idea where it was coming from. Hmm. Not only was it vibrating the King's Chamber, but it also vibrated the Queen's Chamber.
Because the pyramids are built for that incredible acoustics.
Sound attuned, sound built, sound activating, deep knowledge of the music of the spheres through sound and what sound can do for affecting reality. So that covers it all.
So when a pharaoh, for example, was laid in the sarcophagus, is that
well,
right?
The pharaoh may have or not done this. But certainly certain trained priests and adepts who have the right codes and initiations could surround that pharaoh and create a sound field that could put the pharaoh through different states of consciousness, including out of their body, levitating them, and any other kind of thing. All of that could be done with activated priests who are initiated properly that know how to do the correct invocations and the correct sounds at the right time for the right purpose.
Can you give us any invocation or sound?
Oh, I don't know how much of that came through the phone.
Oh, that's pretty good, I think.
That's the idea.
I loved it. That was pretty fast, Randy.
Yeah,
thank
so
you.
I would do that in these temples.
I could feel that in my heart, actually.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. I did it so much one day I could hardly speak. It almost blew my voice out for a while.
Well, I'll betcha.
Because I wasn't going to let up. And when I would get into some of these rooms, I'd find the sweet spot in the room. It's a place you could stand where with the least amount of effort, the sound would just vibrate the whole room. Hmm. Sometimes I'd just back up a few inches or a few feet and stand in the corner. And then I'd look around in the room and I'd follow the sound, and then I would get the room going. Hmm. So what happened in this time in the pyramid is after doing that for a little bit of time, with very little effort now, because I'm in the sweet spot. I mean, the sarcophagus is a whole story in itself. So laying in the sarcophagus, there's a certain resonance that's just a little around 117 hertz inside, which is like a sharp B flat note. Hmm. And then the room is resonating between 121 and 125 hertz.
And the sarcophagus is at the top?
It's on the floor in that room.
Okay.
Not in its original location because it's been moved, but it's still, you know, in the room, and there's no lid on it, and it's made of two different kinds of granite, so they knew what they were doing in making it. The dimensions of it and everything are very, very auspicious.
Hmm.
The parallel, lots of the different measurements and stories about the Ark of the Covenant, so the sarcophagus in the King's Chambers has very auspicious wall thicknesses and depths and dimensions, as does the room itself. I mean, I've gone through the mathematics of all the pyramids there in Egypt, every room, every dimension. So that was part of a 30-year study. So I, you know, take that knowledge and do stuff with it. So I'm laying there, and then all of a sudden on the ceiling, this electric blue light starts forming on the ceiling. So the whole ceiling has this electric blue-like mist that's down about 6 inches to a foot coming down from the ceiling.
Oh, wow, how thrilling.
And then all of a sudden, all the electrical power in the pyramid goes out. Hmm. The Egyptian officials didn't know what had happened. You know, it was very interesting.
Did they get angry with you?
No, they knew something. No, there's ones there that are very tuned in.
Hmm.
And some of the people that work in the pyramids are not normal human beings.
Hmm.
They look like it, and you can shake their hand or hug them or, you know, that type of thing, but
do you think they're Syrians?
That watch over the pyramids because of different things that can happen. So they may look like a policeman in a uniform, or they may look like a priest with a turban and wearing a robe. But some of these beings are not who you think they are.
Are they from Sirius, do you think?
Well, they could be from a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, there's a lot of different star systems that are anchored into the pyramids.
Hmm.
Because it's not only for one star system and not only for the Earth. It's for all the things the pyramid can do that affect a lot of different star systems.
Hmm.
So it's sort of a confederation project, you might say.
Hmm. Tell me quickly, you touched on the fact that the Syrians had a lot of mathematical and geometrical wizardry beyond other galactic arenas, is that right?
Yeah.
Did I hear that correctly?
That math is star code language. It's not left brain math at all. not that the left brain isn't used in the process, but it's not the stuff people learn in school that turns them off to math. The real math of the creation codes is beautiful stuff. It would bring you to tears if you understood it deeply enough. My friend Wes Bateman, who passed away a number of years ago, that I did a lot of this research with, the beings told him, and these were beings that were involved in building the pyramids that he was in telepathic communication with.
Mm-hmm.
They were called Gratians. And these are some of the beings that the ancient Mayans were, according to this story. Anyway, they said that they pray to the Creator in numbers. And once you understand that these numbers are creation codes, you're literally touching the aspects of the mind of the Creator with every single number.
Wow.
And every single number has its own diva or angel that watches that number. And you could literally be moved to tears if you understood what these numbers mean. Because it's not quantity. It's about qualities that the numbers resonate. Well, quantities can be involved, and measurements can be involved, like 440 cubits in the base length of the pyramid and, you know, 280 cubits in the height, for instance. Okay, that's a quantity and a measurement. But it's also a quality, because each of those numbers represents aspect of the total Akashic divine blueprint mind. And it's so vast, and that's the field of the numbers that I carry around with me.
So as we use those numbers, even if we don't understand, it's using respect and reverence.
Yes.
And then we can kind of absorb it or integrate some of it.
Right. And those numbers are encoded in the monuments, sometimes in obvious things, like in the King's Chamber. The south wall has 27 blocks on it, and the north wall. No, the south wall has 37 blocks, and the north wall has 27 blocks. And that ratio 37 over 27 is the physical constant of hydrogen. That's aspect of physics that has to do with manifestation of matter out of light photons. So that number is right there. Now, if people look at the wall and they don't count the blocks, that doesn't mean that that number 37 on the wall isn't radiating to them. Do you follow me?
I do.
Their conscious mind might not see it, but that number is broadcasting, and they are in a room, you know, with special number codes on it. So some people will get these things. Some people might know it, or I'll tell them, notice this, and I'll tell them what it means. Now, once you have the conscious knowledge, your cognitive perceptions can change, and you can connect with things in a different way than where that number is broadcasting to your subconscious or your unconscious mind. And you're in the room, and you might not be aware of the number of blocks on the wall. But the number of blocks on the wall is not accidental. It's way purposeful. And that's another way that the room resonates to you, because this knowledge is in stone. The whole pyramid is a textbook on the creation of the universe.
But it's also emanating the wisdom, so you pick it up, but you can, it imparts the wisdom to you.
Yeah, and even in temples that have had destructions and corruptions and things, the original anchoring of the star system knowledge and the temple, the Akashic field, may still contain the perfected blueprint of the temple. So even though you're walking around in a room with walls missing and things that are crumbled and disarray and whatever, from earth changes and earthquakes and human destruction and all that, you can tune into the vibratory field of the original blueprint, and that blueprint can broadcast to you. And so things happen to people when they walk around in these monuments that they might not expect. Sometimes they evoke it. Sometimes they come in and ask for it. Other times, you know, they're completely naive to it, and something they'll get something very, very profound.
Are you going to go back? Are you going to keep going back?
Well, I've been invited like four times next year. And the fellow I've done the last two tours with, Paul Hubbard, already has the tour set up for next year in December, and we have private time on December 21st in the Great Pyramid in the King's Chamber.
Wow, 2012, hey?
So I'm already having people, you know, really sort of begging me to go back again.
Wow. Well, now here's a quick question for you. This is a very quick question. Ha ha.
Can I give a quick answer?
I doubt it.
I don't know if I'm capable.
We're talking about the Mayan calendar 2012. What's the link between the pyramids and that? There's quite a bit of link, isn't there?
Yeah, because the Mayan temple matrix all over the world in Central, South America, and so on, the mathematics there is all linked in with the pyramids.
Uh-huh.
And some of that is up and running at the same time and is part of the pyramid matrix. And all these sacred sites talk to each other mm-hmm. through frequencies now.
Hmm.
They broadcast 1.45 hertz, which is way down the bottom of delta mm-hmm. frequency. And all the sacred sites are vibrating at this really low frequency, talking to each other. And the Great Pyramid is the center of the whole matrix.
Hmm. And so the pyramids that are in the Yucatan and the South America and all that,
China.
Yeah,
they're in communication with the Great Pyramid
continually. So, that's wonderful. I mean, I love to hear that. That's kind of the living earth with its...
Yeah, these are living monuments. They are not inanimate stones. They are imbued with, like, personality, consciousness. For instance, we did a ceremony at Karnak. There's a little temple out behind Karnak where there's a statue of Sekhmet mm-hmm. out of granite, and people really feel that being there. And so when we got done with the ceremony, the Egyptologist opened up the room where we were all doing this private ceremony, and the different priests there, and they saw the room filled with that electric blue light.
Hmm.
And that room also was powerful because that where that statue is one of the key acupuncture places in all of Egypt.
Wow.
You can actually talk to the entire matrix of Egypt in that room.
Hmm.
And you wouldn't think it. You know, it's a very humble room. Nothing special. And in fact, most tourists would skip it. They wouldn't even be interested in going there unless somebody told them about this statue.
So you kind of need to know who your tour guide is.
Yeah.
We need to go with you, Randy.
Yeah. Well, there are people who know. I mean, you know, and we work with amazing people, too, and the tour group and a totally astounding Egyptologist who's a way spiritual guy named Sammy who we work with as well, who, you know, makes sure that we can do the ceremonies we need. And I get complete cooperation. I've had complete cooperation from the secret police there to make sure that nobody disturbed the ceremonies that I was conducting.
Wow, that's great.
And they kept other people, including other tours, away. They knew that serious business was going on.
Wow, that's a play on the word serious.
serious.
So tell me this. I'm thinking about the Mayan calendar because obviously we're headed toward that kind of supposed experience.
Yeah, we might get there before we think we are there.
Yeah, well,
that happened in October, huh?
Yeah, really. I keep hearing various interpretations of that. But is there some kind of predictive force at the pyramid, you know, in the Egyptian world that would meet the predictions of the Mayan calendar? Not predictions.
Yeah, the whole time, there's an extraordinary timeline in the pyramid that has been checked out and goes right along, right, you know, to the day, to the year, and everything. Based on certain measurements in different places that show this timeline that's in the pyramid. But then it gets to a place, this one on the ceiling in the Dendera temple that has the helicopter and a tank and a submarine and
oh, wow.
all this, you know, way up in the top. And then there's a break where there's a missing piece, which could possibly represent that part of consciousness that doesn't know what we are going to create.
Mm-hmm.
And so, certainly, I'm not sure who to check with right this moment. I have to think about who's taken that timeline and overlaid it with the Mayan timelines to show the distinctions between the Egyptian pyramid timeline and what the Mayan calendars are saying.
Well, we might have to get you back on to finish that part of it. Can we go back into our hearts and also the blue light? Can you give us some...
You want me to tell you about that blue light?
We'd like you to take us on a little bit of a trip here, yeah.
Okay. Well, now, what's really interesting about this blue light, I mean, it connects in with the halls of Amenti underneath the pyramids and other dimensions. But basically, If you looked at the cells of any living thing on Earth under an electron microscope, now I'm talking about butterflies, fish, frogs, reptiles, humans, mammals, anything.
Leaves?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's an electric blue light in the nucleus of the cells that's glowing. It's blue, like a cobalt blue, but it's also a little bit washed out because the spiritual white light that's glowing there makes the blue paler.
Hmm.
So it's like looking at a pale blue-white flame.
Okay.
And that little pilot light we all share in common, that blue light.
That's the oneness?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And often when the Christ and other Christed beings appear, they appear in a halo or an aura of that electric blue light because that is the sustaining color of our universe, that blue color. Not only this world, but our universe is based on the sustaining color of this particular blue.
Hmm.
And our RNA runs off a color. It's called RNA blue. It's also a very, very special blue light. So,
does it have a sound, a note?
Yeah, it could be a whole overtone series of cluster. I've been looking for the very precise single fundamental note that that blue is, and I have some auspicious ones that I consider highly likely that they're the right one. I'm still working with it a little bit. And now, if you want to work with this light, there's a breathing technique I'll tell everybody, and they can practice this.
Okay.
And you breathe in through your nose to the count of five. And once you establish a comfortable pace for the count, the in-breath and the out-breath will be at the same pace. But everybody could do a different pace, so there's no particular number you have to put on this. So you breathe in through your nose to the count of five, and you exhale through your mouth to the count of 30. And you slightly purse your lips like you're going to whistle. It can be subtle. It doesn't have to be really overt. But you slightly purse your lips and create a little bit of resistance when you exhale. So you're always inhaling through your nose, and you're always exhaling through your mouth with pursed lips and a bit of resistance. Into 5, out to 30, and there's no break between the inhale and the exhale. It's just continuous. Now, when you start doing this, you start visualizing, starting at your feet, like your feet are turning into particles that would look like you're going to beam up on Star Trek, but they're electric blue-white particles. They start at your feet, and it goes up your entire body to when you're visualizing, you look like you're beaming up on Star Trek.
And this is after a period of time doing the breathing?
Yeah, you do the visualization while you're doing the breathing to get it really going.
Okay.
And once you practice this enough, you can get very good at doing this. I've had experiences where I completely turned into this light and merged with it through working with that teacher that I studied with, Bob Rasmussen. So I had a very profound experience with this. So I know that in telling the listeners what I'm telling them, that the whole knowledge, Akashic field of what this is coming through my description. It's different than if I read it in a book. Do you follow me?
Yes, I do.
I'm literally broadcasting that reality in my words and in the spaces between my words. So if they really tune into it, they can go to that place. Now, once that light gets going, if you want to transfer that light to an object or to a person that you're, let's say, doing healing work with or something, you use your thumb, your forefinger, and your middle finger, that little tripod, because there's different circuits in each of those fingers. And you use that on your left and your right hand, and you can touch different points on the body. Now, when you study this, it's called regenesis as a healing technique. You learn all about all these different points and so on. But people can also channel that and use their intuition. But that's one of the ways you use your hands like jumper cables when the battery gets worn down in a car and you call the towing service and they put jumper cables on. Well, your hands are working like jumper cables. And so anytime you feel that this energy is like too much, you just stop doing the special breathing and breathe normally and you can equalize.
Hmm.
Now, what I used to do, especially as a trumpet player when I would play concerts, is I would do this breathing on my way to the concert as a warm-up.
Mm.
And then when I get to the concert, I'd have this other energy field going in me, and I'd play the concert with this kind of energy field.
Well, I bet you felt high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I'd work on expanding that field to where the whole group could get caught up in that field.
So this is a real healing tool, is it?
Absolutely. One of the best I've ever learned in my life.
Multidimensional.
Multidimensional. Because what can happen here is you can have, now I use the word healing, that could be, I could say, a recalibration, a balancing, a harmonizing, there's a lot of terms you can use instead of healing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but
I think of it as making us receptive for these downloads or to these downloads.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you can have a healing on the emotional, psychic, spiritual, physical, any of the, or all four of those levels at the same time. And what happens is based on what you're ready to have happen, plus your intention, plus the intention of a practitioner working together. So it's possible that somebody receiving doesn't even believe in it, and a healing could happen.
Hmm.
But also, depends on what you're ready for. And it never pushes the river of something that somebody's not ready for. The level of respect that's built into this light is clued into the person's soul. So it never goes beyond free will. It's not something you can blast somebody open before their time. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
It's completely regulated from a higher level of consciousness.
So is it a Syrian technique, or is it?
I believe it is, because Bob used to talk to me a lot about knowledge from Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I first learned about it, because he was my friend, he was a friend and mentor, and he basically downloaded because no one else in his family could he really download to. And so I was sort of like the son he didn't have that he could basically give his whole record to.
Lucky you were. How wonderful.
Yeah.
But also then, back to Egypt, there are a lot of healing techniques that are well recorded from Egypt, aren't there?
Yeah.
Like shape, geometrics.
Yeah, a lot of the healing work that Dr. Ibrahim Karim does, he's an architect from Cairo,
mm-hmm.
and he developed biogeometry and biosignatures, and that also came out of deep study of the ancient wisdom that had to do with the science of shapes and how shapes can heal. That's why we have expressions like bent out of shape,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
And getting in shape.
But so is that sacred geometrics as well? Is that the same
totally.
Thing? Yeah, mm-hmm.
totally. But it's also looser than the, you know, seeing some geometric shape that everybody can say, oh, there's a recognize, like a dodecahedron or a tetrahedron, there's a recognizable shape. This level of sacred shapes can also be with curves, because the curved lines are more the feminine aspect, the straight lines are more the masculine aspect.
Hmm.
So somebody could see something that kind of looks like a blob, but is very sacred. Do you follow me?
Yes. Can you intuit that?
Yes, absolutely. All this can be intuited.
Mm-hmm.
Any of this knowledge by resonance and love and gratitude, one can step into a field whereby their personal body and soul antennas are tuned, and this information can just come to them.
I also thought that from the Egyptian and thank you for that, it's really interesting. From the Egyptian times, weren't there a lot of, like the use of intense focus, that kind of visual?
Yeah, well, you'd learn how to hold the focus so much so that you could levitate something if you needed to.
Right, or you can pierce into something.
Yeah, and I have that kind of concentration where I can literally burn a hole in a paper if you know.
You can do that, Randy?
I can. Well, I've done some things. You know, let's just say, because you concentrate enough. I mean, now you have to do it so that it doesn't. You don't lose energy. You have to do it for the right purpose, really.
Right.
You don't do it. The only time you can do it to demonstrate is in a teaching situation. You can't do it to show off.
Okay.
Ever.
Yeah.
Because there's other ramifications of misusing this or ever stepping out of the right field to do anything.
So, and you can't be so intense about it that you're in agony.
Yeah, or create disturbance patterns that aren't not appropriate. But that power of concentration and focus is really important. And you can concentrate and focus like that and make sounds and open up glands inside the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tibetans did it too. And this is all from the ancient knowledge from the stars that was brought here.
So the Tibetan knowledge probably came from the same place, right?
Yeah, and that knowledge was also in Atlantis, and the Atlantean knowledge went to Egypt, and it went to Tibet, and in the Yucatan and other places in the world, British Isles, as Atlantis was you know, as people moved out from the Atlantean concentrated area and took knowledge and wisdom all over the world and brought artifacts and geometries and various things. It's all part of the ancient Earth grid.
Do you think did you say the Atlanteans were tutored by Sirius as well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hmm. Yeah. And there was different levels of Atlanteans, ones who were more like light bodies, and then there's the denser type that had the regular physical bodies, and ones who were very in touch with various star systems directly until, you know, they began to get out of tune and lose track with that. But when they were in tune with that, then that as above, so below, and as within, so without, in the star knowledge was up and walking here, radiating into the Akashic field of the Earth here.
Hmm. So let's jump into ETs. Do Sirians have to bother being ETs to us, or are they just transmitting whatever intelligence is appropriate at the time? You know what
I'm saying?
In other
words, do they have to bring a body here?
Yeah, are they floating around in our...
Not at all. They can totally telepathically broadcast this information through the grid, through the understanding of the geometric pathways, through portals, through a lot of different things without ever having to physically come here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can come here without physical ships at all, completely traveling in light geometrical shapes called Merkabas.
Merkabas, wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So do you think we could master that?
They do not have to physically show up.
Mm.
And they can telepath to somebody who is here, who can be a receiver, and that person can beam that energy right through them out into the field here.
Hmm. Wonderful. Now, one more level of our conversation. I love this conversation because everything you've said has got a lot more information, but we don't have enough time today.
Yeah.
But I do know you're composing again. Would you like to tell people what kind of music you're doing right now?
Well, I'm exploring taking this ancient knowledge into one level or scientific recordings where I'm recording tones with different instruments and tubes and tuning forks and bells and gongs and things, and creating different sequences based on this knowledge. And then I'm also working to encode this knowledge into regular compositions that sound totally like standard music. It doesn't sound New Age. It doesn't sound far out. It doesn't have to, but has these codes based on the proportions and sequences and rhythms and the spacing between notes. There's a lot of ways to encode high levels of mathematics and mathematical knowledge, etc., into music.
Hmm.
But I want to sound like music rather than sound like a science experiment.
Right. And so what you're doing is raising the fields and frequencies in your home and anywhere.
Yeah. And for when people hear that, I want those codes to get passed on so that if they're receptive, it's appropriate for them to interact with it.
And if they're not receptive, they still might be receiving
the
downloads.
There's an intent for blessing and goodness to occur through hearing it, that it brings goodness to their field, to their life, to the, you know, to the environment that they're playing it in, regardless of these other levels and layers.
Wow.
There's lots of layers in the mysteries, and layers can be encoded into something based on one's receptivity without any demand that anybody have to be subjected to any layer that they're not ready for.
Wonderful. Well, so you're going to give some more classes, aren't you? Some workshops?
The next one I'm going to do in my home will be on the 5th and 6th of November that works with these things that we're talking about.
So that's like a mystery school group.
Yeah, and people can connect with me through email or by phoning me, either way.
And your website is universalsong.net?
Yes, but this information won't be posted on the site because it's not just generally available. People have to call me or come through a reference, so they won't find this knowledge posted on my site.
But they'll also find on your site will be the products and the various
some of the product. Mm-hmm.
Tools
and
of consciousness.
And my phone number, mm-hmm. they can phone me and call or email also.
Well, Randy, this has been absolutely delightful for me. And, of course, I've learned a lot, as I always do when I'm talking to you. And I thank you so much for...
Well, your questions are great. They're just, you know, Dee, we could do a program on just one of the questions.
Yeah. I tried to cover as much as I could, but we've left a lot undone. So
I hope it brings goodness to all the listeners and just brings something to them that brightens up their being in some way.
Thank you so much. And also, it would be nice if we had you just before you gave your next big workshop.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Let's do that. That would be great.
We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
Thank you so much for all your work.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye.
So that was Randy Masters with Music of the Spheres. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and Randy's a paradigm shifter, and you probably are too, or you won't be listening to this show. If you'd like to email me with your suggestions for other guests or your comments on Randy Masters' talk tonight, or just to have a session with me or let me know how you're feeling, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. That's veronica@veronicaentwistle, no H in Entwistle.com. And thank you so much for listening. Many blessings. Good night.